ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अथाफ पापीयसीम योनिम आसुरीम याहि दुर्मते यथेह भूयो महतम नखरता पुत्रा किल्बिशम अथाफ पापीयसीम योनिम आसुरीम याहि दुर्मते यथेह भूयो महतम नकर्ता पुत्र किल्बिषाम् अथाफ therefore पापीयसीम् most sinful योनिम् to the species of life asurim demoniac yahi go durmate o impudent one yata so that iha in this world bhuyaha again to great person Mahatam personalities. Na, not. Karata, will commit. Putra, my dear son. Kilvisham, any offense. Translation. O impudent one, my dear son, now take birth in a low, sinful family of demons. So that you will not commit such an offense again towards exalted, saintly persons in this world. Purport. One should be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of Vaishnavas, of whom Lord Shiva is the best. While instructing Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava as Hati Mata, a mad elephant. When a mad elephant enters a nice garden, it spoils the entire garden. Similarly, if one becomes like a mad elephant and commits offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, his entire spiritual career is halted. One should therefore be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Mother Parvati was justified in punishing Chitraketu, for Chitraketu impudently criticized the Supreme Father, Mahadev, who is the father of the living entities conditioned within this material world. The goddess Durga is called Mother, and Lord Shiva is called Father. A pure Vaishnava should be very careful to engage in his specific duty without criticizing others. This is the safest position. Otherwise, if one tends to criticize others, he may commit the great offense of criticizing a Vaishnava. Because Chitraketu was undoubtedly surprised that Parvati had cursed him. Therefore, the goddess Parvati addressed him as Putra, or son. Everyone is the son of Mother Durga, but she is not an ordinary mother. As soon as there is a small discrepancy in a demon's behavior, Mother Durga immediately punishes the demon so that he may come to his senses. This is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. To surrender to Krishna means to surrender to his devotees also. For no one can be a proper servant of Krishna unless he is a proper servant of a devotee. Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtar Payeche Keba. Without serving a servant of Krishna, one cannot be elevated to being a servant of Krishna himself. Therefore, Mother Parvati spoke to Chitraketu exactly like a mother who says to her naughty child, "My dear child, I am punishing you so that you won't do anything like this again." This tendency of a mother to punish her child is found even in Mother Jashoda, who became the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mother Jashoda punished Krishna by binding him and showing him a stick. Thus it is the duty of a mother to chastise her beloved son, even in the case of the Supreme Lord. It is to be understood that Mother Durga was justified in punishing Chitraketu. This punishment was a boon to Chitraketu, because after taking birth as the demon Vritrasura, he was promoted directly to Vaikuntha. So of all the offenses to the holy name, then this offense to the devotees is the most severe. It's the most difficult. Because this can halt the devotional process or even greatly upset the whole devotional process. That is the position of this mad elephant offense. So here, Chitraketu, being very qualified in his devotional service, then he saw Lord Shiva, and he is making comments. He has made comments about Lord Shiva's behavior. Because being a great personality, then he's expecting that he will set an example for the common person to follow. But we see that Lord Shiva is doing something different than he expected. So he is making the comment that he, though being very exalted, is somehow or another sitting, you know, very intimately with his wife in a public forum. Of course, what is mistaken here is this is not a forum in which a common person is sitting there. Lord Brahma and all other great personalities are sitting there. And so these are the persons. They know Dharma, but they also know the position of Lord Shiva. So someone who is in such a powerful position, they're not to be criticized on these small points like this. It means they may be, one, those who are close associates may make some comments, because then being friends, being advisors, they're equal or superior in this way in the relationship. So they may say something. But if that's not there, if that relationship's not there, it's not to be said. Right? It won't be said. Like Lord Ramachandra, when he came back from Lanka, no one, not one person, mentioned to him that they felt that Sita being away at Ravana's place for such a long time, unprotected, then would be socially unacceptable. It just wasn't said. No one said it. No one even thought it. But one person made that comment. He was thinking like this, and he made this comment to his wife, washerman. He was, you know, very one of the general citizens of the kingdom. But this would have never have come to the ears or the attention of Lord Ramachandra. The only reason it did is because he himself personally went out incognito and was seeing what is happening in the kingdom. Then only he found this out. Otherwise it wouldn't be said. It means if there is some discrepancy, He has his advisors, he has his ministers, he has the Rajguru, he has so many other relatives and well-wishers and friends. They'll say these things. That is the etiquette. So we see that these points are very fine points. And we see both sides are being presented. This is a very important thing. If we want to understand Vaishnav etiquette, we have to understand that there's two sides. And everybody should do their duty, what is their side, what is their position, and not worry about the other ones. Like we see in the beginning, it's pointed out that Lord Shiva and the others don't feel bad because they know what is his point. He is an elevated devotee. He is an Uttam Bhakta. Lord Shiva is, you know, also Uttam Bhakta, but in a greater capacity. And Brahma and all these others are great sages, a very advanced personality. They know what he means. They know that it doesn't look good. The common person might take it otherwise. And since everybody in that assembly, their only interest was to establish Dharma. In fact, they were just sitting in the assembly discussing the philosophy and Dharma. So naturally then, they understand the purpose. But at the same time, as nothing changed. Right? One, he is in wonder that how it is he is establishing the Dharma and he is doing these things. At the same time, as others may take it badly. So worrying about the common person may take it badly, he made this comment. And everybody understood it like this. Right? But Krishna arranged it that Parvati didn't see it like this. Right? So we see that Chitraketu's position in the beginning of the chapter is pointed out that it's not, he is in wonder, he is not actually criticizing. You know, it's in one sense almost a glorification that he is so controlled in his senses and everything. And he is acting in these ways. But, you know, the example may be taken otherwise. But, yeah, so that is pointed. Then the next point that comes up is that the devotee, he himself always sees himself as more fallen, more low. He is not a devotee. Everyone else is a devotee. So then, why would he have considered that he is more self-controlled than Lord Shiva? He shouldn't have thought that. He should not think he's advanced. First symptom of a very advanced devotee is they don't consider themselves so advanced. Well, it's not the first symptom. The first symptom is that they identify themselves as the servant of Krishna. They're always surrendered to Krishna. Then they have so many other of the 26 qualities of a devotee. Humility is generally always manifest. So they will always consider themselves not advanced. Others are advanced, they're not advanced. Because, as pointed out, if we want to get the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then we can't have this pride. Krishna is not proud of his position as God. He's not always trying to get us to understand that, right? It means we're proud of something, we'll generally mention it or try to bring it to someone's attention, you know, either grossly or subtly, or in some means we try to get someone else to understand what we've done, right? But it's considered more gentle or more refined if one doesn't mention these things. In the course of conversation or that, they may come up, right? But we see Krishna, even in the course of, it doesn't come up. He's doing everything. He's controlling everything. But except for a few living entities in the material world, no one even knows that he's doing it. It's run so, managed so perfectly. And he takes the background so much, you don't even see his acting. So he's not worried about taking the credit and this and that. That is not, so therefore pride is not there. Pride's not the problem. It's not an element. So therefore, he's not feeling bad. I mean, he's not, he's not trying to present himself. So now we see that Chitraketu is presented, he is thinking that he is advanced. So because of this, actually one is not qualified to come and sit under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. One is not qualified. This is a very essential point. It means it's one stage in the devotional development. Then we find that to the point yet, one may be point, a very advanced stage. But unless one is humble, one cannot come fully to the platform of prema. Right? One gets obstructed in one's devotional service. So therefore, it's very important that this point be practiced from the very beginning, from the very early stages in devotional service. Humility is practiced, because if when we don't have much understanding or devotional practice, we are proud, what's going to happen when we are actually qualified, when we are devotionally qualified? Right? That is the point of lower than a blade of grass. A blade of grass is a blade of grass. It's not something great. So Lord Chaitanya doesn't say we should be humble like a blade of grass, because a blade of grass is in a humble position. It's nothing overly wonderful. A blade of grass, you know, it has its position. You know, it looks, if it's kept nicely, it looks very nice and all that. But it is a blade of grass. Everybody steps on it. I mean, everybody. Even the animals, everybody steps on the blade of grass. So he says, more humble than a blade of grass. Because if one has no qualities and one is humble, that is natural. That is normal. That's human life. If one has no qualities and one is proud, that's considered not very acceptable. But now if one has good qualities and one is not proud, that is the perfection. That's more humble than a blade of grass. Because a blade of grass doesn't have much qualities, therefore it's naturally humble. But we see it's very common, someone has qualities, they become proud. So when one comes to the platform of pure devotional service, if one is proud that one has come to the platform of pure devotional service, it will be very difficult to come to the platform of pure, unalloyed devotional service. Because pure, unalloyed means there's nothing there, no alloy of any unfavorable quality. Right? So this point must be practiced from now, so that even when one does have qualities, then one is not proud of them, because one understands they're coming by the grace of the spiritual master, grace of the devotees, grace of the Lord, like that. So then it's pointed out his position, that he was wrong for this, because he was taking the position that he was proud and in position to advise. He was an advanced devotee. He had darshan of the Lord. He was very dear to the Lord. But also so is Lord Shiva, so is Lord Brahma, so are the four Kumaras, so is everybody else. They're not saying anything. Then in the etiquette, why he would say? He's the new man in the assembly. Plus, he's a Kshatriya, and they're all exalted Brahmins and, you know, the leaders of the universe. You know, he's a leader in his place. But he's not a leader in this assembly. So it was a breach of etiquette in this way. Though from another angle, it was seen as not a problem. Right? So Shiva sees it in how he should see it. That, oh, he's talking about establishing Dharma, he has a point here. And he understands the purpose of the Lord to take him back to Godhead as quickly as possible, because this person is very dear to the Lord. So he's saying nothing. He is taking the humble position. Chitraketu should have seen it that he shouldn't say these things. Right? And then here we have that Parvati. Then she's seeing it as the mother of all the living entities in the universe, because that she is the original mother. And Shiva is the original father. So generally one doesn't criticize in this way. So then it is her business to correct the son. That you're, and she mentions impudent one. Therefore, her problem is being impudent. But she says, my dear son. Like that. So she is pointing out that she is caring for every living entity. But if they're acting improperly, it's her duty as a mother to correct. Right? Because the mother, she establishes, she trains very nicely in a very direct day-to-day manner the culture, the etiquette, the dharma. The mother, she deals with this very much. That's her duty. Because she, every movement, the detail, everything, every little, she's there and see what the child makes. And anything that's not correct, it's not just the gross points, it's also the very subtle points. Just the mentality. Like I was seeing the one girl in Delhi. And she was living with a group of Brahmin girls. And they're all going to school together. So then she is, in their same class, they're all learning everything together, and they're all, same age and same ability. And then I noted that she had learned from her the behavior of these Brahmin girls by being in their association. But she had learned from them the behavior of these girls when they're amongst themselves, when they're in private, or when they're with their mother. This kind of a mentality. But, being new means she wasn't from that group of, she's from another kind of, cultural background. So she didn't notice that there were different ways that these girls would behave. And when they're in public, or when they're dealing with some other authority other than their mother, that they would deal in a much more formal way. So she would deal with everybody how she would deal with these other girls when they're alone, when they're amongst themselves as friends. So it's very subtle. But things like this, then the mother would point out that you behave like this in the house, but when you're out, you don't do this. Even though externally, the movements and everything were pretty much the same, but the mentality is different. There's a difference in subtlety in the mood that's there. So these are the things that the mother will see, because she's always with the child at a young age. So then she will point all these things out, the subtleties and the actual even just behavior, just how to move everything in the young age. And then as one matures in that, then also the father's influence starts to become prominent. So it's her business to correct in this way. So then her position here we see is also being pointed out as correct. That she is chastising the child, and she is doing so in such a way that he will understand what is the proper behavior. Right? She's identified exactly what's wrong, and she's giving a solution for this that will give the proper result, which it does. Right? We see that in the next life, then, as Vritasura, then he's very humble and he's very working with the Lord's plan. Right? He's conscious of the Lord's plan. Here he was unconscious of the Lord's plan. He made a statement which he shouldn't have, so the Lord could make this arrangement to bring him back to Godhead much quicker. Like this. So the whole idea is that in etiquette, then everybody has to understand their position. One can't see it from the other's position. Otherwise it throws off the relationship. Right? That's the whole thing. One has to see from one's own position and relate to the others based on that. Then it works very nicely. And in this, then also we see that at one time you won't necessarily have one aspect working at once. Right? Here we have Chitraketu is making a comment, Shiva with Parvati as leaders of the universe. Parvati is dealing with Chitraketu as her son. Right? And We see, so there's all these different things will be happening at once. So we may have friends, we may have so many things. We have someone who we're dealing with, just like you may have someone who's in a senior position. And he's dealing with someone who is in his care. So then the relationship is that of senior to junior. But now that person who's in his care, maybe he is physically older than him. Or he may be generation-wise by initiation senior to him. Or he may be in a senior ashram to him. So these two have to be balanced. You can't take, well, I'm the leader, he's the follower, and that's it. One has to consider that. So one may be giving some direction, but one has to also be respectful and deal with that other person according to their position also. So then you find both people are dealing with each other respectfully. And one administratively is organizing and giving the direction, the other is following. So these, one has to be able to accommodate more than one thing at once. This is the uniqueness of, this is the platform of emotions. Emotions you don't generally get one at a time. There may be a prominent one, but there's so many things happening at once. So these things are to please the Lord. The variety of emotions happening at once is for the pleasure of the Lord. That is where it originally comes from. The relationship of the devotees with the Lord. They have their main fixed relationship, and then within that, then there's so many elements that affect that and create all kinds of interesting things. Right? Just like Nanda Maharaj, when Krishna was born, then his fixed relationship is that of parental. But when the other elder gopis came to him and told him how fortunate it is now you have fathered a son, he was very amazed. He was astonished. So astonishment is one of the secondary rasas. So he's experiencing the fatherly rasa and the amazement rasa, plus at the same time then all kinds of ecstatic symptoms were manifesting at the same time. And all this together becomes something very nice and pleasing to Krishna. So the material world, the workings of how people relate to each other, this is also then established by the Lord. How to relate, how to deal, how to interface with someone else. And as a devotee, one is always looking for that position. I mean, always looking for the good qualities in others. Even if someone is junior, one sees the good qualities and associates with those good qualities. And appreciates those good qualities. And then everything works very nicely. Then all the relationships becomes balanced very well. Of course, it works much easier if most everybody or everybody is trained in this and everybody works on the same platform. It makes life a lot easier. But we do see that if the devotee is determined, despite this, if they follow the etiquette, everything works out very nicely for them. Maybe not in the beginning, that's what Krishna said, right? That is, but at the end, that is about the mode of goodness. Beginning may be a little rough, but at the end it is very nice. So then one has to consider all these different things, and the culture is very important. Any questions on this? Yes. Traditionally, no. Because the conjugal rasa will never be manifest before the children. Because in they will be the working together. I mean, those intimate aspects won't be manifest in front of the children. But here, sitting on the lap and holding each other, is that's what he's mentioning. He's not mentioning that they're sitting together in the assembly, because the kings and queens also sit there. But the queen sits and the king sits, and they don't. The queen doesn't sit on the king's lap, and he has his arm around her, and she has his arm around him, like that. That you don't see. That won't be seen in public, like that. So that's not manifest. Otherwise, then these things are brought very much to the front, and then the children will imbibe these things very, very much. You know, it's just like I was. Yeah, it's just these things are manifest. Like I was when I was in England, I was looking out the window, right? See, I said, I thought it was very interesting. As you, when you're younger, you look out the window, you see something, you want to go outside. And as you get older, you find that, you know, you're content watching everybody else moving around outside. That's enough exertion of energy, is just watching everybody else do, right? You know? Like that. So the only thing missing was the rocking chair and that, but whatever. So I was looking out the window, and I was watching all these young parents go by. And there'd be, and every day there was one mother who would go by with her child in the pram, pushing, you know, a small child. And she was walking by in these really high-heeled boots and like a leather skirt that was, you know, exceedingly short, you know. I mean, even if you added on, you know, at least nine inches to a foot, it still wouldn't reach your knees, you know? And so then this kind of mood is picked up by the child. So that whole mood then becomes imbibed by the child. And the child, at a very early age, they start doing these things. As soon as they are able, then they pick up this. So we see in the Vedic culture is those... the intimate aspects, the conjugal aspect is never seen by the child. Only the parental aspect is seen. Because then that is what they imbibe. And that becomes like their fixed, the unconscious mood in them. So the senses are controlled. Things aren't, you know, physically, aren't there. It means parents with them is very physical. Or them with their, you know, other friends or, you know, brothers and sisters and all this. But the parents with each other is not. And then when they become of age, then they know that these things are there when they become conscious of it. But subconsciously, that's already fixed. Because what one easily naturally does is what is subconsciously fixed in the mind. And then the conscious, you can change that, but it takes a great, great endeavor consciously to do it. So in the Vedic system, you wouldn't see this. Like that. But as pointed out, Shiva and is a great controller. He's an Ishwara. So they're in a different category. They're not in our category. Because they are not conditioned to the material nature. Parvati is not conditioned by the material nature. She is the material nature. Shiva is not conditioned. He's in control of the material nature. So they're in a different category. And you won't see them in public like this with common people. Whenever you see them come down or they move with the public people, you know, most of the time they take the form of a hunter and his wife. They don't behave in this way because people don't know who they are. So they come, he's a hunter and she's there also, and she comes with all their ghosts and goblins, all dressed up as hunters and huntresses and these kind of things. And so then they'll deal and move in that way. But even if they do deal like this, then they'll say, well, what to do? They're hunters, you know? They're not actually within the culture, within the Varnashram. They're outside Varnashram. Hunters, all that, they're outside. So even if they did, someone would say that's because they're in this position. Like that. So it's just, it's another thing. She is his... How do you say? Krishna has transformed into Shiva to control his own energy. So there's no problem here. The problem in the material world is though you're working on the reflection of the energy and energetic, or the Purusha and the Shakti, but you're actually doing both as Shakti, they both belong to the Lord. So the husband and wife, it's not actually a proper position, you know, because they both belong to Krishna. And their bodies are all material energy. So they follow the reflection of the whole culture according to the rules. You know? Does that make some sense?
Yeah. Seeing them as completely apart from the rest of the
population. Yeah. It means we've all been at the time of dissolution, we go into the body of Mahavishnu, and then when he breathes out, then the material energy comes, and with his glance, that's Lord Shiva, and that carries the living entity. So then when that glance enters the material nature, then we are born into the material nature. We get our forms and our bodies. So he is the father and she is the mother.
I was just saying that in a child's early life, the mother is more influential, and the child gets older, the father's more influential. It seems to me that the teenage years are in between, and how do we do that?
Well, traditionally, they would be dealt with by either other members of the family or by teachers, because that time is very, very difficult. So, because of it's mainly the familiarity. Because as I was mentioning, is so much is gained unconsciously. The children, it's just like, the children are very not so conscious, and because of this, they do funny things and they drop things and just behave in a way that's not, you know, so refined or mature. But they're very sensitive to the surroundings. Just like you see an animal, they can tell if somebody is friendly, not friendly, all these different things, because they just catch the mood. So the child, the first birth is considered the animal birth. So they have those sensitivities of the animal. So then the whole idea is then the parents train them and the community train them in the sensitivities of a human, that they consciously become how to utilize those facilities, rather than the animal sees not friendly, then they growl or bark or like that. But in the Vedic culture, you see someone who may be not friendly, then you may deal with them a little more formally, you know, as long as it's not physically dangerous. But, you know, the dog will take it as physically dangerous because that's all they know is the gross body. But Prabhupada says even an enemy is treated, shouldn't know that they are an enemy. They are treated very nicely because you never know. One, you don't want to make an enemy more inimical. They can make more trouble than they already are. Second is enemies can always become friends. Prabhupada pointed out there's no better friend than an enemy who's become a friend. And there's no worse enemy than a friend who's become an enemy. Right? Because the enemy, he knows all your bad qualities. If despite that, he has overcome that and seen good, his friendship is very deep. And someone who's a friend, if they become an enemy, they know all these little intimate things about you. They'll just make so much trouble, like that. You know. So the whole in the culture, one deals. So that then the you know, in the beginning, especially the mother, she's dealing. And as they get older, the father starts to have, even at a younger age, but generally the first 5 years, especially the mother is the one who's always with the child, and then the father is now and again. But kind of after that age, then you see the father kind of has a little more influence, can talk, can say something, and it gets through like this. So in the tradition, then, much of the time you would see grandparents would be dealing, uncles, aunts, teachers, all these others who are seen and appreciated as authorities, but who don't have the bodily familiarity. Because, oh, yeah, that was the point. Was because the child is unconscious, they're not actually conscious really in the beginning how much work the parents are putting into the whole process of raising them. They don't understand how hard the parents are working, how tolerant they're being, you know, how much when they were, you know, real young, they drove them, you know, nuts, you know, how many, you know, how for years the mother never slept properly, all these things. They don't know. They don't know how much is sacrificed because it's just there. Because of affection, you don't want them to know. You don't want them to know that, you know, Mother Yashoda never lets Krishna know these things. It's not telling you, hey, listen, you know, you kept me up all night last night. You know, they don't say that. It's just part of their rasa. It's understood they're going to do that. So that's why so much respect must be there for the mother and father, like that. So in the, how you say, in the realm of authority, then mother's the first, then the father's second, then you have the teacher. That will just be there, because then from the teacher goes on to the spiritual teacher, goes on to, you know, the acharyas and Krishna. But then as far as like gratitude, what you owe, like that, then between the mother, the father, and the teacher, means who teaches you the things of the material world, not the spiritual master. But of that, the mother is 100 times more than the father, is 100 times more than the teacher. Because of just what they've gone through. You know, the teacher, you're a qualified student, he'll take you. You're not a qualified student, he won't take you. That's his duty. But the parents, you know, it's just, that's the way it is. Qualified or unqualified, they put in the time. Like that. So the child doesn't see that. He actually only understands that. So therefore they take, you know, their food for granted, their place to sleep for granted, that everything's going to work how, means they become the center of the house. When the child's in the house, means the center changes to the child. You know, that therefore the conjugal rasa isn't manifest in the public home scene. It may be privately where no one else sees, but in the home, as soon as the child's there, that is the sandhi, or the junction between the parents. So all the attention goes there. All the other relatives, they come to that. You know, it's like they come, everybody gets into the kids. You know, like that. And they bring their kids, everybody's just into the kids. So that becomes the center. So they're used to being very much taken care of. Then when they get old, so that works very nicely, basically up to about 10. You know, 10 is like the pure devotee age. They're, you know, very wonderful. They chant their rounds. They relate with adults very, very nicely. But then somehow or another, at 11, things start to transform quite quickly. Right? You know, like that. Like that. So you got the terrible twos. You got the more terrible 11s, right? You know, or the terrible teens, I guess. So like that. So then, at that time, they have to be trained by others, because all the fundamental things have been given by the parents. But becoming conscious of what one has gotten in the family, what is bigger than the family, because their consciousness is just the family and their own ideas. But they have to expand beyond their ideas and beyond the family to understand there's a community, there's a world, there's a universe, there's God. So the parents are given the fundamentals of all this, but some may be conscious, some may be not. Like this. They just know that they should do like this, but they don't fully understand why. Their parents have told them, behave nicely when you're public, behave nicely, sit nicely, don't speak badly to others, and all these different things. But they only know the situations they've been with the parents and how the parents are always going to take care. So the tendency is when one feels very sheltered, one has a tendency also to get a little proud, a little bold. Like here, Chitraketu is sheltered by the Lord. He becomes a little bold. You know, like a child will be with their father, or that they don't mind saying something else to another kid. But the father's not there, the kid won't say anything to the other guy because he knows they'll beat him up, you know? So it's like that, the tendency is there. So that pride comes up, it's very natural. So then, training from others in the community, that becomes very essential in those from those time. And then they make them conscious of what's going on. The duties to the parents, the duties to the teachers, the elders, the spiritual master, to Krishna. They carry on, like Prabhupada, I think it's in his, is it in the Gita? He mentions that his appreciation for his spirit, his father, who established all the principles, that then his spiritual father then carried on. So that's the whole point, is it's not that the teacher is teaching something they didn't already get at the house, but now consciously and technically they're teaching it and trying to bring it to the point of realization. So that's generally. So the whole Vedic system was, is they're with the parents, so they get all that necessary input when they're young. Then they're with the teacher for some time to get them kind of like, you know, make them at least, I say, apply what they know. And then once that's done, then they go back to the parents, where they then situate themselves in the community. So that would be the tradition. Does that make some sense? Okay, yeah. It's very difficult, not because the parents aren't qualified. It's because of the relationship, the child takes everything for granted. You know, like that. So therefore, you know, they won't properly respect necessarily the authority of the father or the kindness of the mother. Depending upon the child, it may be more gross or more subtle. You know, like that. But it's always there, even in the best families. It's very subtle. That's all. But it's always there. Okay. So you'd see that in the tradition many times, like I think Bharadvaj and Rai Bhyamuni, they had ashrams fairly close to each other. But when their child came of the Gurukul age, Rai Bhya sent his child to study under Bharadvaj, and Bharadvaj sent his child to study under Rai Bhya. Like that. Because it's just known. Even the best, most qualified person can't train his own son very easily. You know? Unless it's something of an art or tradition that is some family thing that you install some aspect of identity with. You know, like let's say the father's a very good musician. He may be able to train the child in being a musician. Like that aspect he may do. But generally you'll see the finer points of etiquette will be learned from others in the family. You know, if they don't, let's say they don't go to Gurukul, they would learn it from their grandparents and uncles and aunts and these persons. They would be the ones that would tell them, you know, this is not proper. Like that. So it's always, the support is always there. At least, you know, should be there.
Yes, okay.
Specifically sons, because see, there's this unique thing that comes in the boys that you don't see so much. It's very light in the girls. Is that from, it starts, well, I don't know, I think it starts when they're born, but it kind of like ends around 19 in the boys. They kind of become more conscious of what's going on around them. Girls are pretty much conscious all the time. You know, there's quite a few years of difference in maturity of the girls and the boys as far as observation of what's going on around them. Like that, girls are much better at observing material energy than the boys, and the subtleties of like the emotions and all that. They see them, the boys don't necessarily. Boys are trained in them from Shastra. Then from Shastra, then it's pointed out, here it is. Then they know it. Right? So that is why the husband is the Guru Pati, because he speaks from Shastra. And the wife, Dharma Padmi, she speaks from the experience in Dharma, or the practical, on that side. So that combination becomes very strong. But generally you'll see, you know, it's like little boys are just wandering out, don't know what's going on, and their older sister, which may be even just 1 or 2 years older than them, will come and direct them what to do, pick them up, take them here, there, sit down, feed them, dress them, they can do all that. I mean, I've seen it a lot. I've seen 4, 5, 6-year-old girls take care of their younger brother, you know, who may be even just 2 years younger than them, 3 years younger, you know. Just, it's very common for them to do that. Like that. So that is there. And generally they'll get the most, how you say, direction from the mother. Means boys and girls get, in the beginning, the mother's always the first teacher. Like that. And most of these subtleties from there are gained. Though for the boys it's unconscious, the girls it's more conscious. But the technicalities are learned then from the women for the girls. And the technicalities are generally learned from the boys from the men. Like that. Because they'll view it differently. Like that. They'll view it differently. No, the girls can, one will see that the mother still should be able to have good influence. Because there's a particular, there's a different kind of bonding that's there. It's a different kind of bonding. It's like, like the woman's bonding is more spoken. And the men's bonding is not. It's very difficult, because what's happening in here is, because of the nature of the way Krishna's arranged it, everything keeps flipping. What looks like one thing on the outside is another thing inside, and then again it's very complex. It's very, very difficult to explain. You know, like that. But the fully it can't be understood, because that's the whole point. Is Krishna is always amazed when he sees Radharani, and Radharani is always amazed when she sees Krishna. Therefore, every time they see each other, it's a new experience. Like that. So even though, you know, so much is known, you've heard so much from your father and mother, and you've lived with men and women, you know, your whole life, still there are moments when men are amazed by women and women are amazed by men. It's just the way it's made. It just has to be like that. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a higher rasa than friendship. You know? Because there's always something you never knew existed. You know? Because hopefully it goes in a pious way, so it's a more pleasant, you know, and it's not, it doesn't, as Prabhupada mentions in the third verse of the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1. Sometimes the conjugal rasa ends up in ghastliness and horror with some, you know, amazing murder scene or something like that. So he mentions that, but still it's based on, that wouldn't happen so much in the friendship rasa, because, you know, you're dealing, it's different. So the girls can gain a lot from their mother, like that, and that will be then supported. The mother will be established as a very conscious authority by the other members of the family. Like others in the community will mention that your mother's giving you good direction, this, that, and all these things, you should listen to this. You know? Or they'll ask, your mother didn't teach you this? You know, so they'll have to say yes. And then they themselves will say how this is, must be followed. Right? So because of that spaciness in the boys, you have to take them out of the home environment kind of to make them conscious. Even if it's just for a short time. It just has to be long enough that they develop the consciousness that there is something bigger than just themselves and the family taking care of them. So however long that takes. You know, so some time should be spent in that way outside of the home. So they become conscious of it. Then once they're conscious of it, they can continue to be trained in the home. You know, or what do you say? It's generally more, once they come back, it's more the community then. They become aware of the bigger, like that. Girls become aware much earlier, you know, like that. They understand the whole scene, you know, all the relationships and all this. It's just, there's a difference, you know. how the modes kind of work in general is the same all the way through year to year. You know, they'll get also restless at that age, the girls, 11, 12, and these things. You know, the even years will be more mellow than the odd years in the teenage time, you know, like this. Except 19. It's kind of like out of, means 11 to 17. Those will all be basically the same, but their awareness and maturity is greater in the girls than the boys. That's why it's recommended in marriage the boy is older than the girl. Otherwise they won't be similar in kind of their maturity. If you have a boy and girl exactly the same age, the girl is actually materially more mature than the boy. Like that, because she's been observant and thinking about the material nature and to deal with it longer than the boys have. Right? The boys, when they hit teenage, they're just playing with it, the material energy still. The girls are serious about it. You know, they're not thinking just play. They're thinking, you know, it's time to start actually getting serious about controlling it. You know, the boys don't kind of come into that until later. Like that, it's a whole thing. So that aspect is different, but otherwise the influence of others is very important. Right? That's the whole. That's the whole importance of community, is that there's common values, so therefore the elders in the community then can speak, but especially family, like that. But then, you know, it'll take some time for that to be developed. You know, when you start with first generation, it takes some time. You know, but then that is supported then by the community, which just means the others in the who live there who have the same values and same culture. Right? And then that is then, naturally as devotees, then supported by the spiritual authorities and the Shastra, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And then you have a very consistent system, though each one may be emphasizing a different aspect of it. Like here in these, over these few verses, then we see that the relationship, Chittaketu's position is established in a positive way, then it's next established in a negative way, then it's established, Parvati's position is established. Like that, so it all goes on. Right? So in that way, then the mother may be emphasizing one thing, the father another, the teachers another, the spiritual master another, but because it's all based on the Bhagavatam, you know, it's all based on Krishna. Therefore, there is a consistency as long as one is trained and sees that whole line. Because it's very important that someone who's speaking on the spiritual topic doesn't undermine the other aspects. Like someone's talking Bhagavat, you don't undermine the Pancharatrik or the Vedic. You explain those in relationship to the Bhagavat. Someone who's discussing the Pancharatrik will explain that in relationship to the Bhagavat and the Vedic. Someone who's explaining the Vedic will explain in relationship to the Bhagavat and Pancharatra. Then you have consistency. Otherwise, you'll have somebody saying one thing, someone saying another, and it creates a lot of problem. Right? Does that make some sense? What time is it now? Right? 9:20. So we're over time. We will stop here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur. Amen.